Does it frustrate you that perhaps not enough of us have lived that life as wholeheartedly as not only you hoped, but as would suffice to create the kind of critical mass out of which a powerful situation would arise?
Well, there has been that critical mass, I think, in the past. My only concern is that perhaps we no longer have it. I say perhaps, because I'm fully aware that there are good people in the movement, order members and mitras, who are very faithful to our objectives and who really do get on with their practice, whatever it is, and are genuinely trying to lead committed Buddhist lives. So my hope is in them. But whether they constitute a critical mass at present, well, the movement's pretty big, and I'm not able to say.
The other day when we were talking, you referred to what you termed, I think, as a belated adolescence that you felt or feel that some people are going through in relation to you. And I wonder whether you realise just how challenging people have found you. What a powerful presence in each of our psyches you have been, particularly for people who've worked close to you. To a degree that, irrespective of any intention on your part, could feel oppressive simply by virtue of your size and your degree of primacy.
Mm. Well, I've noticed it. I don't want to get too particular or too personal, but I have noticed it. Even not so very many years ago, people could feel, order members, even senior order members, feel quite oppressed by my presence, which did surprise me, and feel much more free to talk and chat when I was not around. And I was a bit disappointed by that, that after so many years, they still feel that way about me, as though I'm a bit like the headmaster. And they may be prefects, but prefects are also students in the school, and headmaster is headmaster. So I have been rather disappointed that some senior order members haven't grown out of that.
But do you think there is a part you play in that?
Well, I'm the object of those feelings, so to that extent I do play a part. But one of the things I have learned is that human nature is unfathomable. You cannot predict anybody's reactions. So whatever steps you may take, wherever careful you may be, there's always that X factor in them which may produce unexpected results.
Sure. In the early days of the movement, it was quite widely known and talked about that Banti doesn't meditate.
Hmm.
And what you said at the time was that you didn't feel the need to because insight was arising in you quite naturally and spontaneously all the time.
Hmm.
I suppose that the question behind this is how you would describe your own spiritual life over these last years. While has your work been your spiritual life, or have there been all kinds of threads developing quite in a way privately?
Yeah. Well, the work has been my spiritual life, but not entirely. And it's also not quite correct that I never meditated, but I have meditated from time to time intensively for a period, maybe for several years. But also, of course, I do spend a lot of time reflecting. And that reflection can go very deep. And yes, I mean, there is insight there. I don't want to make any claims. I've never encouraged the making of claims by anybody. I think that can be sometimes misleading or unhelpful. But yes, I mean, intuitions have been there and intuitions have developed, and I've reflected on them. Sometimes there are experiences that come to me quite spontaneously, not as a result of any effort, whether in meditation or otherwise. But this is rather more difficult to speak about than it is to say, well, every morning at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, as I did in Kalimpong, I used to meditate for such and such length of time. It's different from that. Also, of course, there's my whole dream life, which I don't usually talk about. And dreams have been very important to me, and some of them, of course, are or have been and still are of a visionary nature. And this has gone on all the time. And of course, I reflect on those experiences. I had such an experience just a couple of nights ago. And there's a very important series of dreams prior to my handing on my responsibilities, you know, for the movement. All during the preceding week, every night I dreamt about my teachers. And I dreamt about all of them. Now previously I'd often dreamt about my teachers very vividly, but usually just one at a time, from time to time. But on this occasion, that week, every night I dreamt this one or that one or two or three of them, and in the course of the week I had dreamt about all of them several times. So that sort of thing is also going on. I have these, you know, what I call sort of archetypal dreams. They're not always archetypal, but very often they are. And even when I was very ill the year before last, as it is now, I had many such dreams, which seems to balance, you know, the very difficult and painful experiences of the day, you know, due to chronic insomnia. I was often wandering in an unknown city, and I was quite often, again, usually in India, with a group of Tibetan monks, or with a group of yellow-robed Theravada monks, some of them my old friends. Sometimes I was chanting with them, sometimes I was just listening or watching them perform pujas. I had that sort of dream a number of times. And a few of my teachers came into those dreams, not very many. I remember perhaps especially Dilgo Khyentse came into them. But there were other very beautiful dreams where I was climbing up a steep rocky mountain, got to the top, and then coming down the other side, I came to beautiful green fields or a beach and the sea, and was seeing very beautiful, Turner-esque sort of scenes. Those dreams were very common.